Hello, everyone. This is a very exciting episode. So, for many reasons. First, this is the first episode of the Halloween Countdown for 2020. This year has been interesting, to say the least. And we need this. Secondly, this is a location and an interview that I've been sitting on for months. And why? Because it's too good not to be a special episode for Halloween. This is a magical location, filled with wonders and curiosities that you can't even begin to imagine. A place described by some as, quote, home-sensed through the eyes of Stephen King. I mean, come on. If that doesn't get your juices flowing, I don't know what will. This place, this amazing place, is called the Cabinet of Curiosities and Otherwise Needful Things, located in Dundas, Ontario. I will, of course, have the location and other contact information up on my blog so you can check it out in person. This is one of those places that is a must visit, and I know it's at the top of my list. The last thing that I'll mention before I get started is that they also rent out some of their amazing stuff for film and television props. Their credits include The Handmaid's Tale, Orphan Black, The Umbrella Academy, American Gods, Rain, and Hannibal, to name a few. So how cool is that? So I spoke with one of the owners of this magical place, and I think when you hear him speak, you will quickly learn that Mark clearly loves this shop, and he loves what he does, and that he's a complete joy to talk to. So if you visit and he's working at the shop when you go, if he's not busy, of course, then you're in for a treat if you get the chance to talk to him. So big thank you to Mark for the chat and for his patience in waiting for this episode to come out. I want to also just, of course, say thank you so much if you're tuning in again, and welcome if you're a new listener. And also stay tuned for the end of the episode, because every Halloween Countdown episode will come with its own challenge or way to enter my Halloween giveaway. So you don't want to miss that. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. So as I mentioned, I spoke with the co-owner of this shop. His name is Mark. Now, one of the first questions I needed to know was, how did this incredible shop come to be? Mark has been, in his words, an obsessed collector since the age of 12, and would do some dealings at flea markets in his teen years. Then Mark started off a career in advertising, but quickly his collection began to overtake the first floor of his building. As this grew and sort of became an antique shop, Mark started to slow down on the advertising and marketing and began focusing on bringing in more items into the collection. Now, about 6 or 7 years ago, something big happened that seemed to shift things for Mark and the Cabinet of Curiosities. He met someone named Jessica Phillips, who was the fiance of the late Billy Jameson, who had a show on the Discovery Channel called Treasure Trader. So let's take a listen as Mark tells us a bit more about Jameson and what this brought to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
He was famous for shrunken heads and mummies and everything, but his start was phenomenal because his big, big, big kick was he bought the Niagara Falls Museum. I mean, that was the longest running privately owned museum in North America, 1820s right through to 1990s when Jameson bought it. So he had the show for 6 years and he was going full steam with his house and doing sales, buying and selling. And then he died on his 57th birthday. And then I started working with Jessica. We became friends, and the material that I was able to pick from that estate, you don't get that twice in a lifetime. It was absolutely incredible. I mean, we had shrunken heads, we had tribal skulls, human skulls, we had sacrificial blades, we had tribal masks, we had Victorian taxidermy going back to like 1850s. We're talking lions, tigers, bears, monkeys, sloths. I mean, just exotic stuff, just totally unique. So that switched the shop around almost overnight. That's how it all began. And then the shop basically just, now I folded up the advertising and marketing agency, and the entire building now is the shop.
That's awesome.
And we get people coming from across Canada, from the States. We get people from England, from Germany. We're known now.
Now, I wanted to talk about inventory, because this is a Curios shop like I haven't seen before. And their website and Instagram are incredible to look at. And this is what Mark had to say about what they look for when buying for the shop.
The inventory on the website is nothing. The website represents 2 to 5% of right. the inventory that we have.
What's your criteria like for items coming into the shop? Do you have a certain criteria of what you look for?
We want wow factor. So even the most mundane thing that's like not macabre and not creepy and not spooky, see, it's just a kitchen grinder, you know, from, but it's got to be like 1850s or something like that. It's got to be embossed, it's got to have patent dates mm-hmm. on it, it's got to be, everything has to have wow factor. But our primary goal is 90%, I would say, would be this over the top macabre and creep factor, and we want to challenge your sense of normalcy. When you walk into our store, you walk into an entirely different world. The best thing about this shop for Dave and myself is that we get to kind of realize that rush every time somebody comes in. Everybody is blown away. They love the place. They want to talk to us. They want to know, how do we get this stuff? Where does it come from? And they can't even begin to absorb it, because if you go into a regular antique shop, you'll be able to point out, like, oh, there's something unique over there. The biggest downfall in our shop is that your brain basically explodes the first shelf you look at, because I can have ancient Egyptian beads from a tomb right beside a Mayan sacrificial blade, right beside a medical human skull, right beside a taxidermy monkey.
Now, the biggest question I had is, where do you find this stuff? Here's what Mark had to say.
What is funny is that you find the most incredible stuff in the most obscure places. I mean, what I always try to keep in mind when I'm going on house calls, because we'll get people call us up. And the other thing is, it's taken years and years to build up the awareness. When the awareness is built up, like if another dealer does a house call and he gets a house full of, you know, basically his theme or his mandate for his shop, and there'll be one oddball, like maybe there was a relative who was a doctor who has a human skull they've had mm-hmm. in the basement forever, then we get the call for that. Or coffins or embalming kits or Victorian taxidermy, stuff like this. Some of the absolute best house calls I've went on, it was like I just didn't want to go to that call.
Yeah.
You know, they were in areas that were completely built up. You know, there's some rules of thumb that you kind of follow. Like if an area has been rebuilt up in the 50s and through the 60s and through the 70s, I mean, everybody who's moved in there has turned over, and as they turn right. over, of course, they get rid of the old. But I've walked into places where, again, you never know where it's coming from. It's an estate. I walked into one place in Oakville, and four generations back, they had been some of the first settlers in New Zealand, and I picked up a marquetry box that was completely handmade with inlaid woods, all harvested in New Zealand, that made this elaborate box. Inside it was filled with sheets of fern specimens, all with hand notations and in ink, period ink, 1860. Botany was huge and ferns were huge. We're really big into natural history, you know, so you never know where this stuff's going to come from.
So finally, I could wait no longer to dive into the big question. What are some of the paranormal stories from this shop, or from some of the objects that they've had come in? Of course, there have to be some, right? With such incredible stock here. And let me tell you, the stories do not disappoint.
Yeah, there's been a few instances here. Now, the thing is, when I talk about it, I almost sound kind of aloof. I completely believe in ghosts, and they don't freak me out at all. The most recent one was actually really kind of neat, because it went right over my head at first. So what happened was, the shop is overwhelming to a lot of people. So this one woman in particular came in, and I'd known her for quite a while, but she'd never been into the shop. Mm-hmm. So she came into the shop for the first time, and she right away kind of closed up, you know, arms were tight at her sides. She was definitely kind of rigid, and she was like, you know, but what she didn't tell me was she was getting vibes right away. I'm showing her around the shop, and she's going, oh, yeah, okay, you know, and she's kind of humoring me a little bit because she's freaked out, and I'm super excited to show her all the crazy stuff in the shop and everything. And then we get to a certain point where it's we're going to go into from the one main room into this back room, and right at the doorway, she stops and turns to me and says, where's the doll? And went right over my head, because right. What we'll do is we'll put some kind of generic pretty pieces in the shop so that it doesn't people don't get overloaded. So when she said that, where's the doll, it went right over my head. I said, yeah, you know, we do that. We put dolls in here sometimes and you know, kind of eases the tension a little bit for people who are a little anxious. And she just stared at me, and I said, yeah, you know, okay. And then we moved on. And we walked around again. I showed her around the rest of the shop. And we got back to the exact same spot. She looked at me, stopped me, and she goes, where's the doll? And I went, what? And it took a minute. And then I realized that the hairs went straight up on my neck. Right at our feet, at that spot, was this antique doll chaise lounge. But that morning, there was a doll on it. And I sold the doll an hour before she got there. So the doll was gone. She had no knowledge of the doll being there. It was impossible for her to know there was a doll there. And she's just staring at me. She goes, don't be surprised if they bring it back. I go, what are you talking about? I go, is it haunted? She goes, yeah. And it's not a happy spirit. Yeah, she goes, there was something about it. It's a bad energy right here.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people walk into the shop and stop in the front entrance way and be very concerned and come back and sage. We had another instance where we had just brought in an Egyptian Coptic mummy's hand. It was a Coptic priest, and it was just the hand, right? It had a hieroglyphic band on the wrist and everything still. Just an incredible piece. And it had just come in, and we put it in this kind of a tabletop display case, and it was in the center of the one room downstairs. And I was working upstairs, still running the advertising agency at that point, so I used to work all hours of the night. And a friend of mine was walking by, walking her dogs, and I get a text, and she goes, I see you. And I thought, okay, she's just making fun. I never go home. I get it. Yeah, I'm working all night again. You know, thanks for reminding me, whatever. And she goes, and I see little Mark too. A buddy of mine is also named Mark, and he's, you know, much shorter than me, so hence the nickname Little Mark. And I said, nobody's here. And we're texting this back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's here. It's just me. And she goes, oh, my God, I'm coming back. And I'm like, okay, freaked out. What's going on? Mm-hmm. So I kind of creep downstairs and flicking lights on as I go. And she's at the door already. And I go, what are you talking about? And she goes, when she walked by the front of the building, she looked in there. She saw me upstairs with the light on. Mm-hmm. And then she at the downstairs level, pitch black. She said it was just like the movies. There was a figure standing in the middle of that room, which mm-hmm. would have been directly beside that display case with the mummy hand. And it was one of those figures where when she looked in, it was a brilliant light behind it. So it was a jet black silhouette of a smaller person standing right there in the middle. You know, Coptic priests were, this was a small hand. They were small people. I mean, mm-hmm. they were not a small stature. Nothing happened after that. You know, we sold the hand and nothing happened after that. Now, there's a funny footnote to that story.
So I have to interrupt for a second here because a well-known person bought this hand. So Mark and I decided probably best not to say who it is exactly, because this person actually ended up bringing the hand back and telling Mark, no, I can't keep this because it, quote, has bad mojo.
And then I ultimately sold it to a major collector in L.A. There was another one, and this was just a weird one that happened to me. And why I'll never forget it and why it sticks with me is that it came on literally out of nowhere, out of the blue, and it came on like a freight train. Because I would stay in the shop till midnight, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and out of the blue, I would get up to leave, and this terror would envelop me. And I had to get from the upstairs to the front door, which was just a matter of crossing a large room upstairs and then going down the staircase. And then there's just a small entranceway and then the front door. I would prepare for it, knowing I was going to work late, and I'd have all the lights on, you know. So as I went down, I would turn the light off behind me, get to the next one, turn the light off behind me, get to the next one. And then every time I got to that front door, completely overwhelmed with this mind-numbing terror that it knew that if it was going to get me, it was now. And as soon as I got out under this, poof, it was like washed away. It literally stopped as fast as it started. It lasted about at least a month, though. And I have no idea what that one was attached to. And the other one, this one was really bizarre, too, because I had one staff left working downstairs. And it's a Victorian house, 1850s. So you come in the front door, there's a room to your left and a room to your right. So to the left, I had one staff would sit down there, and I had a postal screen from 1860s. And that's the very decorative post with satin glass.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so you can't see through it. It's a privacy screen from an old post office. And my staff would sit behind that. So you would have to walk over and look over it to see her. So anyway, she was the only one here, and I was the only one here. So she was down there. I'm upstairs. 5 o'clock hit, and I said, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here, which I never did. I said, I'm leaving. I'm beat. I got up from my desk, and I walked halfway across the room to turn around and go down the stairs. And I'm halfway across the room, and I hear, like super excited, loud mumbling. And I thought, oh my God, somebody's pissed off. Because we will get somebody come in every now and then who is against the Victorian taxidermy or against the human skulls and just wants to make an issue out of it. I thought, I am not dealing with this. So I said, you know, Val's downstairs. She can handle this shit. In hindsight, the funny thing was, when I heard that, it's hard to describe. I thought I could understand bits and pieces of what they were saying. But in hindsight, I couldn't understand a single word.
Right.
Not a single word. It's like I've replayed this 100 times in my head. So I just went back and sat down at my desk. And I waited. And it went on for about another 30 seconds, maybe a minute. I waited, then it went dead silent. But I didn't hear the door. I didn't hear any exit. I didn't hear anybody leave. I didn't hear a conclusion to it. So then I literally, like a little kid Christmas time, creeping down the stairs on my tippy toes, right? I get to the bottom of the stairs and I peer around to the left. Nobody's in the room. I peer around to the right. Nobody's in the room. I walk in and I go, did he leave? And Val pops up from behind this privacy screen like a jack-in-a-box. Oh, my God, did you hear that? Right? Yeah, where is he? What was he pissed off about? And she goes, there was no one here. And she's just beside herself. This was in the middle of the day. This was 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
She goes, I looked up and she goes, when it first started, she said the voice was moving around the room. She just literally ducked down behind that privacy screen and just sat there, you know, and then I come down, did he leave, right? We did figure something out. We had just recently brought in an overmodeled Vanuatu tribal skull. So that, to me, explains the language I couldn't understand. I think we sold that piece fairly quickly, and I never heard anything back about it. So those are the highlights of the haunting of the cabinet.
So those stories are wild, right? But also completely understandable for what some of these objects are. Another story he told me about was a chair that was acquired with an acquaintance. It was a chair from an old asylum, and what made this metal chair unique was that it had a modified armrest, as this chair was used for bloodletting, So I have mentioned this briefly in other episodes about how it was commonly believed way back when that everything wrong with a person was brought back to the blood or the fluids in the body. So this chair was actually painted and put in someone's garden. So Mark describes the desire of his friend to get it sandblasted and back to the bare metal. So his friend took it to a sandblasting place that was owned by a friend of his. When the chair was brought into the bay, an employee who was described as a very large Aboriginal man looked at it and freaked out. He refused to go near it. Now his boss told him, it's a job, get it done. So the next day, the man came in and saged the place, sandblasted it as fast as possible, and as soon as it was gone, saged again. Next, I asked, what are some of the creepiest or most disturbing things they've acquired over the years? And this is what Mark had to say about that.
It's hard to say because we're kind of overwhelmed with stuff. I mean, we almost become a little bit jaded at this point. So I would say probably for me, it would be the most sensational item. So one of the pieces that I always refer to is we had a sacrificial blade. On the top, it had a jaguar with a bell in it. So they would hold it up and they would ring the bell to chase away the demons so that they could then stab and tear open the chest, rip the whole chest open with this blade, tear the heart out so the demons wouldn't be on the heart. That was a bizarre piece. Medical skulls, we've had tribal skulls, we ended up with a personal collection from the stepsister of Mark David Chapman.
Just a little aside, for those who don't know, Mark David Chapman is the man who murdered John Lennon.
Now, I'm not a big fan of true crime stuff, but when you get something that's this unique, it ended up being a box full of letters Mark David Chapman wrote to his dad while he was in prison. Super 8 movies, birth certificates, and, you know, I mean, letters and cards and all this. I mean, that just randomly showed up that are in my inbox. Ended up another call with a guy out of the States, out of the blue, ended up with the mugshot books for San Quentin Prison, 1929 to 1932. Ended up with insane asylum ledgers from the 1800s.
Wow.
So as you can tell, Mark is such an interesting person to listen to. This was my longest interview to date, and I really enjoyed chatting with him, and I hope to again in the future. So they moved shop a little while ago, and their new address is 30 Hatt Street, Dundas, Ontario. And of course, as I said in the intro, I will have all of the links and information available if you would like to check it out. Something that I loved that he said is that it's a museum as much as it is a store, only in this museum, you don't have the barriers between you and the object. And you can buy if you want to. So if you're looking for that unique experience, this is your place. So thank you so much to Mark for chatting with me, and again for being so patient because I have been holding on to this episode forever. Please go to @cabinetcurious on Instagram and follow their amazing page. Also check them out on Facebook at Cabinet of Curiosities. And finally check out their amazing website at cabinetofcuriosities.ca. If you do go visit and Mark is there, like I said, be sure to say hi. Let them know where you heard about their shop. Don't forget to check out @RealScaryPodcast on Facebook or Instagram to enter to win a prize pack. So you will have a chance to enter every time an episode is released, and the draw will be on Halloween by 9 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.